Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss, and I'd like to welcome you to this episode number 15 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, the podcast designed for smart business owners who are looking to improve and become even more innovative. Now, today's guest on the podcast is Dori Clark, who's the author of the books Reinventing You and Stand Out. She's also a marketing and branding expert, a speaker, and lists amongst her clients impressive companies such as Google, Microsoft, the World Bank, Morgan Stanley, as well as the Ford Foundation and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, Dori is a very impressive individual, and she was very giving on this interview. We had a ball doing the interview, spent quite a bit of time, and she shared lots of great tips with us on how each of us can stand out and differentiate ourselves. We talked a lot about content creation, the need to get your thoughts and ideas out there, as she puts it, basically get it published so that people know what you do and know what you know. We also talked about email lists, about niching, specialization, and at the same time, being versed or trained across multiple different areas. And a whole lot of other cool stuff as well. This is a fascinating interview, so get ready to be inspired. Now, this podcast is sponsored by InnovaBiz, where we help smart, innovative business owners save time and money by making their website achieve more. Of course, at InnovaBiz, we do more than just build websites. We provide solutions to our clients' needs by leveraging the power of the internet in innovative ways. If you want to learn more, then go to innovabiz.com.au, or if you're ready to find out how our magic can help you, then apply for our website accelerator session at innovabiz.com.au/WAC. Before we meet Dori, a quick competition announcement. This week's competition prize is in fact a copy of Dori's first book, Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future. Stick around for details on how you can enter the draw to win that prize later on in the interview. So let's now go into the Innovation Hive and get the buzz from Dori Clark.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and welcome to this episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast. Today, it's my great privilege to have with me Dori Clark, all the way from New York City in the US of A. And Dori is a speaker, a marketing strategist. Let me just have a look over here what else you say on your about page. I mean, there's pages of things here. She's basically a really high achiever from a very early age, so we'll hear a lot more about that. But welcome to the podcast, Dori.
Jürgen, thank you so much. Great to talk with you today.
Yeah, and it's a privilege to have you here. Now, you know, we'll talk a lot more about all the things you've been up to. You're at the Duke University Fuqua School of Business. You're an adjunct professor. Is that your main kind of activity?
It's one of the main activities. I do that and give a lot of talks. I travel pretty frequently for that, and then writing books, including the one that we're going to talk about, my new release, Stand Out: How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing a little bit about that. I see it's posted on Amazon, but not due for release until about mid-April.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, and now your list of clients also is a very impressive list. It includes Google and Microsoft and the World Bank, and who else do we have there? Morgan Stanley, the Ford Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So that's very impressive. So I look forward to hearing about, you know, how you get involved in clients like that, because I'm sure our guests are keen to, you know, provide services to those sort of clients where they can add value. But before we learn more about Dori and all the things she's been up to, I'd just like to announce the competition prize today. And it is, in fact, Dori's first book, which is called Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future. So it was published in 2013. It's been translated into Russian, Chinese, Arabic, French, Polish, and Thai. And I don't know if that's up to date. There might be more languages now, but it's obviously a very successful book and it's got wide appeal. So stay tuned later on in the podcast. You'll find out how you can enter the draw to win that prize and read that fabulous book. So Dory, I noted in your resume and the about page that you were pretty ambitious very early on. So you went into a special program for gifted children at the age of 14, and I think at the age of 18 you'd already graduated from college, and at the age of 20 you had a master's degree in theology. So that's pretty impressive. I'm interested to hear what, you know, at a very early age as a young child, what you actually had in mind to be when you grew up.
Well, you know, I actually, my first love, my first hope was to be an academic. I wanted to be a literature professor, because when I got to college, the professors were the folks that I really admired. I mean, okay, they had cool jobs. They were big thinkers. You know, they got paid to read books and think about things and talk about them with people. And I thought that was the best ever. So I really wanted to try to emulate that. But unfortunately, actually, after I finished my master's degree in theology and I applied to doctoral programs, I actually got turned down by all of the doctoral programs that I applied to. Oh. And it was like a slap. I was like, oh, no, I don't know what to do. And so I had to figure it out. I ended up getting a job as a political journalist, which was, you know, a good sort of second choice. I was interested in that. I liked writing. I liked politics. So that could have been good. But unfortunately, I entered the world of journalism at just about the point where journalism was collapsing. Okay, and so a year into my career, I got laid off. So that didn't work very well. So then I decided, okay, you know, I like politics. Maybe I'll work in politics. And I got recruited to be the press secretary on a gubernatorial campaign. And that candidate lost. And then I got to be the spokesperson on a presidential campaign, which was even cooler. And that candidate lost. Yeah. And so it took me a long time in my 20s to actually find a career. I had to keep reinventing myself. Mm. And, you know, now, a decade plus later, I've had the opportunity to do a lot of cool things. I mean, I teach for business schools, I give talks, I write books. But it was a real process getting there. And I learned a lot in the course of reinventing myself. Mm. And so it was from that personal experience of having so many doors shut in my face and having to try to come up with new answers that I wrote the book Reinventing You for people who want to change careers or who feel like in some way their full talents aren't really being recognized and that they want to find a way to change their brand and change how they're viewed by other people.
Hmm. So was there a specific pathway you had with all these changes, or did you just sort of grab at the opportunities that became open and then realize that there was actually a process that you could write about and teach others about?
Well, certainly living it out, there was not a grand plan. It was me sort of, you know, muddling through blindly and going from one thing to the next, which I think is how a lot of us, you know, handle careers for better or for worse. But it was only afterwards, it was post facto, through the course of evaluating my own experiences and then interviewing dozens and dozens of professionals who had successfully made career transitions, that I was able to determine that there are patterns, there are things you can do that are useful strategies that can hasten your reinvention. And so to spare people the kind of fumbling that, you know, that I did, I wanted to write Reinventing You so that I could distill some of the best practices and you know, hopefully give people a little bit of a toolkit so that if they read this, their reinvention process can go better and faster.
Mm. And of course, I think, you know, you talk about mumbling through as you lived it, but I think there's a lot that the unconscious mind actually controls. And if I reflect back on some of the things I've done and I think, wow, you know, there's some things that are, in hindsight, brilliant strategic positioning decisions, but, you know, they weren't made on an assessment of the strategic position and so on. It was kind of like, okay, I think I'll just do that. And then in hindsight, it turns out to be a brilliant strategic decision. And I wonder how much of that is, you know, because you're clear on the things you really value and the things you that mean something to you and the things that you can contribute to others, that the unconscious mind then just takes over and says, yep, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of things, you know, a lot of our decisions really do turn out to be, you know, luck, where we come into things, serendipity. And in fact, in my new book, Stand Out, I actually have a whole section on how to make yourself luckier, okay, which might, you know, it sort of sounds like an oxymoron. Like, how could you possibly do that? The definition of luck is, you know, that it's this random chance happening. But it actually turns out that a lot of research is indicating that luck, in a lot of ways, is less about happenstance than you might imagine. There's a gentleman who wrote a book called Heart, Smarts, Guts, and Luck. His name is Tony Chan. He's a friend of mine who wrote this book with a number of other co-authors. And what they did was they conducted a survey of thousands of entrepreneurs to determine what makes entrepreneurs successful. And they determined that these four characteristics, what they call heart, smarts, guts, and luck, were the critical factors, and that every entrepreneur kind of falls into one category or another. And, you know, the other ones make sense, right? I mean, you could think, oh, okay, some entrepreneurs are brainy, and some entrepreneurs are gutsy, and some have a lot of passion. But then you look, and about a quarter of entrepreneurs are luck-driven. And that might sound ridiculous, but it turns out that really what this is that these are people who are generally more laid back. They're more open to experience. They're less sort of driven in a type A fashion, where it's always, what am I getting out of this experience? What am I getting out of this conversation? And they're willing to just sort of see what happens. And it's that kind of attitude of humility and curiosity that actually later on people label as luck.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because a lot of, and you know, we talk a lot about innovation on this podcast, and I think a lot of innovation comes around people being curious, people being open to new experience. So, you know, curiosity and enthusiasm and passion comes into it, but it's all about being open to that new experience.
Yes.
And I guess, you know, the door opening may be lucky, but going through it and then taking the opportunity that's presented is probably less lucky. That's a conscious decision.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. So, going back to your childhood again, I'm fascinated because my two kids who are now in their, one's about to be 30 and one's in his early 30s, were very gifted children early on, and that presents quite a few challenges to parents of the gifted children. I'm sort of interested to hear your side of it, you know, from somebody else. When did you kind of realize you were different to other kids, and how did you handle that?
To a certain extent, I mean, you know, I'll take the label. I don't want to quibble that much, and you know, the program that I went to at Mary Baldwin College, which allowed me to enter college early, was actually called the program for the exceptionally gifted. Okay, but you know, that was something that we were all embarrassed to say. We're like, oh God, you know, like we parents liked telling people that that's where they were sending their kids, but the kids are like, you know, no, don't, you know, So it's something that I don't really wave a big flag about, quote unquote, giftedness, because in a lot of ways I don't even think it's really apt. I mean, you know, you see movies or you read books about people and they're doing these crazy physics equations when they're 10 and things like that. And, you know, that's not what I was doing. I thought of myself as being somebody who was a mature person. You know, I was mature very young. I think largely because I had older parents and I didn't have any siblings. And so my peer group was like 40 years older than me or 50 years older than me. And so, you know, when that's your peer group, it's not cool to make, stupid idiotic jokes like a lot of little kids do. You know, it's like you have adult conversations. And so I learned about that and I became comfortable with that. And so I was always more comfortable dealing with people who are older than me. And that was something that, you know, just it sort of stayed the same throughout. I think, sure, I was intelligent enough, you know, pretty intelligent. But mostly I thought of it as a function of maturity and also drive, because I grew up in this little town in North Carolina. And, you know, there's a lot of people that they might be very smart, but they don't have a drive to go to college early because, you know, they like where they are. They like their town. They like their friends, you know, things like that. I didn't, you know, I was at various points in my childhood fairly lonely. I didn't really like my friends that much. I certainly didn't like my town that much. Mm. And so I really, I felt a desire to get out of there. And so I thought, college, that sounds like a great idea. Bring it on. Mm. So so I was actually very keen to do it. And that seemed like a good escape for me.
Yeah. It's fascinating because, like you say, you know, from my own experience as a parent of children that were classified as gifted, it was a case of, you know, we'd always treated our kids as, even right from birth, you know, no goo goo gaga stuff. So we treated them as people. and we started reading to them very early and got reading sophisticated books quite early. So it was a little bit of the same thing. You know, you put them in an environment where they're exposed to more mature stuff and they become more mature. But they were also both, well, they still are very down to earth and very humble, which we thought is great. But they did have some challenges in dealing with, you know, the social aspects of being different and, you know, why am I different? And sometimes there was even the challenge, I don't know whether you ever had that because it sounds like, you know, you were driven all the time. We occasionally had issues of, well, I'm just going to let things slip and, you know, underperform way beyond, you know, way below my means so I fit in with the others.
I've certainly heard that that's a common thing. I mean, I wasn't really doing that necessarily, but I've heard that's a common response.
Yeah. Okay, well, tell us some of the exciting things that have happened since then, since you've come out of college and went through that transition period of reinventing yourself several times as a journalist and a political advisor.
So I did have a lot of sort of front-loaded adventures when I was younger. So yeah, these days for the past 9 years, I've had my own consulting business. So I've been an entrepreneur, which has been fantastic. I really think it suits my personality quite well. And so as part of that, I do you know, a slew of different things. The variety is exciting for me. So as I mentioned, I teach for Duke and a number of other business schools. I write books, including Standout and Reinventing You. And I blog pretty frequently for Harvard Business Review, for Forbes, for Entrepreneur, for Time Magazine. And I give speeches. I actually just got back yesterday from giving a talk in Texas. I do a little bit of executive coaching, and then I do marketing strategy consulting for corporations.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a pretty wide gamut. So is there time for anything else in there, like some, you know, I don't know, some social time or hobby time?
I work a lot. I definitely won't deny it. I love to read. That's probably my favorite. And so I read, you know, there's a lot of talk in business circles these days about, you know, having a low information diet and that it's better, you know, not to read the news or things like that. But, you know, I'm you know, as a former journalist, I love the news. I'm sort of obsessed with the news. So I read the paper, I mean, almost cover to cover every day. That's a very relaxing thing for me. I love reading, you know, high quality magazines like The New Yorker or, you know, Fast Company or Inc. or Wired or things like that. So that's really fun. And, you know, I love going to lectures. There's, you know, interesting talks at a club that I belong to. So, you know, whenever there's a kind of cool speaker, I'll go see that. A couple weeks ago, I went to one about Oscar Wilde and his, he gave a lecture tour in America before he got really famous. It was like the very early days of Oscar Wilde when he was sort of honing his personality and his rapier wit. And so we got to hear about, you know, what young Oscar was like. Okay, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds fascinating. Yeah. And yeah, I saw a TEDx talk that you gave, I think, last year.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was pretty impressive. And we'll post a link to that one so that the audience can perhaps visit that one and just hear a little bit more about some of the things you talk about. So I think topic there was the innovation and about your new book launch, I think it was, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, exactly. It was called How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea. So it's drawing on a lot of the concepts that I write about in Standout.
Yeah. Okay. Well, is there something that keeps you awake at night and you worry about?
Oh, well, right now, what keeps me awake at night is my book launch, because I know a lot more about the process than I did when my first book came out. Mm. I mean, for that, it's, you know, you're pretty reactive. You know, you don't really have a sense of what's coming next. And then all of a sudden your publisher tells you, oh, well, haven't you been doing this? And then you're like, oh, my God, I have to go do that. Now for the second one, I have a much clearer idea of what I should be doing. And so then it's, you know, just sort of weighs on you like a ton of bricks, because you realize that there's so many things that you should be doing that you probably haven't been. So I'm trying hard. I want to launch this book as strong as I can. I want to launch it into the world so that it can make a good impact. So I'm trying assiduously to do it, but I'm constantly worried that I'm not doing as much as I could.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the book and you know, what you talk about in it. Enough to generate some interest with the audience, and we'll post a link to the Amazon bookstore there where you can pre-order it.
Yeah, thank you, Jürgen. I appreciate it. So basically, the idea of Standout is that, you know, we live in kind of a changed world these days, because it used to be the problem was that you needed to get past the gatekeepers in order to be able to present your thoughts and your opinion. And now, of course, as we know, with, you know, the rise of podcasts like this or blogs or things like that, you know, there's no gatekeepers anymore. Everybody can get their ideas out there, which is phenomenal. It's a wonderful thing. But the problem has moved down the pike. The problem now is, okay, now that everyone is communicating, now that we live in this sort of noisy world, how do you get your idea to stand out? Mm. How do you get it noticed by people? You can say it, and that's great, but it doesn't do a lot of good if no one is tuning in or if no one is really paying attention. So how do you break through and actually get people's eyes on you? So that's the premise of the book. And so what I did was I interviewed about 50 top thought leaders in a variety of professions, everything from business to genomics to urban planning to real estate to technology, and tried to figure out among these, you know, most successful people what it is that they were doing in order to be able to break out. So I you know, tried to reverse engineer the process by which they became a recognized expert, so that I could then help regular people figure out how to do that for themselves.
Okay, well, that sounds fabulous. Yeah, and I'm a big big fan of process and making sure you structure things so that you know that, you know, you're following a path that somebody else has developed or modeled, and that's really good way to fast track to success. So really looking forward to read the book and find out more.
Yeah, thank you, Jürgen. Yeah. I appreciate it.
So in terms of, so what do you see as the biggest challenges then you face in all of the activities you've got on and your business?
The biggest challenge that I face is probably, like, right at the moment, time management. I get, I think a lot of professionals probably would say the same thing. I get an enormous number of emails, you know, meeting requests, things like that. And so actually I'm working hard. I'm trying to put in place systems to help me with that, because I know that even if in the short term it means more work, you really need to make that effort so that you can be successful in the long term. So for instance, one of my goals, which, you know, sometimes things don't work out the way you want, is I tried to get it teed up to have a full-time virtual assistant in place by last week, by the, you know, the beginning of March. And anyway, I went through the process, and I did interviews, I did the sourcing, et cetera. I hired somebody, and she started, and she worked for me for a week, and I had to fire her after a week because she was just absolutely not good. I couldn't trust her work. I couldn't trust her to get things done when she said they were going to get done. And I figured, you know what, if it's like this in week one, it's not going to get better here.
Yeah.
So we let her go, and I'm in search again. Mm. So I'm trying to get that happening. But, you know, now I actually have two different VAs that I work with for sort of discrete tasks and part-time work. But you need to figure out ways to leverage your capabilities because at a certain point, you just literally can't do it all. It's not a question of prioritization anymore. It's just you literally can't do it. You have to get another set of hands to help you. And so I'm trying to do that in a smart way. You know, even though it takes longer than you want, I think in the end it'll be helpful.
Yeah, that's great advice, because I remember when I first got my first team member on board and started handing off some day-to-day tasks, how liberating that was. And particularly, like we spoke before the interview, that I've actually spent a few days in hospital last week because I had a little bike accident. And the, you know, one of the really comforting things about when you're faced with a situation like that is knowing that the work for clients is going on and it doesn't all stop because I'm stopping. And also I can, you know, I mean, the nicer part of that is I can spend 3 days in hospital and worry about getting well, but I can also take 3 days at some time and go and do some holiday type activities away from
something
work.
More and, fun than a hospital.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, knowing that, you know, there are other people that continue the work on or that take activities, and then I can focus on where I add most value, which is, you know, what you're talking about as well, is choosing to spend time on the things that add the most value.
Absolutely, yes. Mm.
Yeah. All right. So so if you could wave a magic wand and kind of fix one thing about everything that's going on, what would that be?
Yeah, everything that's going on with me personally, or everything
in
the...
Yeah, with your Dory Clark Enterprises.
Yeah, got it. Because, you know, I mean, you know, Middle East peace, that would be good too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if I could fix wave a wand and fix one thing, well, you know, I'll pick another area that probably many entrepreneurs struggle with, which is, you know, when we think about work-life balance, one of the things that has been challenging, because I do spend a lot of time on the road, you know, I'm traveling a ton. I actually, I marked it out. I needed to get the data recently, so I know that in 2013 I gave 59 talks, and in 2014 I gave 61 talks. So there's, you know, it's more than one a week. Yeah. You know, sometimes a couple in a week, and you know, for a lot of these, I'm flying places for them, so it's a pretty intensive schedule. Mm. And so as a result of that, you know, I'm single, and it's very hard to meet people if you're spending a lot of time on the road. So if I was waving the magic wand, I would probably find a better way to bring someone into my life who was tolerant of such things, and you know, was somebody that was a good match, because it is hard, you know, just like you could, you know, sourcing candidates, so to speak, if you're working a lot, if you're traveling a lot.
All right. Well, I'm not sure we can help with that, but yeah, we'll see how the magic wand works. Yeah,
that's right. It's a magic wand, Jürgen. It can do amazing things.
Yeah. But world peace would be a good one too. I know my wife, where she works, she came back. Of course, she got a bit of a fright when I was in hospital, and she said, "Oh, the people at work are all thinking of you, and they're praying for you, and those that aren't religious are kind of, you know, thinking magic wand stuff or so on." And
yes.
I said, look, the hospital people are great, and I can get better. I'll look after myself, get them to sort out world peace on some big problem.
That's right. That's right. We'll train the brain power.
That's
on,
right. Yeah.
The big problems.
Yeah. All right. Well, so we know what you're currently working on. We've talked a little bit about the book, so that was a question on my script there. But I think it's probably a good time to move on to what we do at the innovation round, where we ask about 5 or 6 questions and hopefully get some really inspiring one line or quick answers from you. And it's the idea there, of course, is to help our audience learn from, you know, business leaders and entrepreneurs who are leaders in their field and who've done some really innovative things, and give them some experience from those people. So I guess the first one is, what's the number one thing people need to do to be innovative?
Well, so in my book Stand Out, I actually have a section where I talk about the importance of combining disciplines. And I profile a number of different folks. One of them is a guy that I did some consulting work for named Eric Schott, who is recognized as really one of the top scientists operating in the world today. He's written more than 200 peer-reviewed papers. He's weighed in and had important research on everything from Alzheimer's to diabetes. And the interesting thing is that even though he is a biologist now, he didn't train as a biologist. He originally, his background was in math and in computer science. And what has made him distinctive is that he was one of the first people that really brought big data to bear on biology. And so that's a perspective that a lot of people who were trained traditionally in biology wouldn't have had. And in fact, didn't have. They were pretty skeptical of him at first, but he's been able to have huge results because of that. So training across disciplines, bringing in insights from different disciplines, is something that I would really recommend as a spur to innovation and creativity.
Yeah, that's really great advice, because I've seen a lot of good examples of that, like the one you mentioned, where people bring a completely different perspective to a field and add huge value to it that others are not able to add. Okay, so what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
So for me, one of the best things that I've done to develop new ideas, I'll just say, I think it's always good to play to your strengths and to play to your interests. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's really through reading. In the early days of my business, I didn't get an MBA. My graduate degree is in theology, but the way that I learned about business was that I was the best customer the library ever had. I literally just checked out hundreds and hundreds of books and was reading constantly. And I mean, now I have a lot of friends that are business authors. And so, tip for people who have friends that are business authors, buy the book, don't get it from the library. Yeah. But when I was young and poor and struggling, I would just check out reams of these books so that I could learn from the best thinkers. And, you read hundreds and hundreds of books in a subject and you'll get good pretty fast.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice, reading. And of course, these days, with the electronic gadgetry that's around, it's so easy to carry hundreds of books with you. You can almost have a library in your pocket, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I know a friend of mine that we sort of have regular catch-ups for coffee and chat and compare notes on how we're doing. And he always has a book with him in a backpack, a proper physical book. And so if he gets to the place we meet before I do, he'll be sitting there reading his book and says, I always carry a book. And I'm more of an electronic gadget type person, so I carry my gadget with me, my tablet, and I say, yeah. Well, I've got about 50 books there. The only challenge for me is that I start reading one and then I jump to the next one, and so I've got about 10 half read.
That's right. Yeah. Tempting.
Yeah. All right. So, what do you think is the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Well, a lot of people swear to certain technical solutions, in terms of project management software. You got Basecamp advocates and Asana advocates, things like that. Mm. Those are good, useful tools to have. I actually just wrote an article for my Forbes blog about a guy named Phil Simon, who wrote a book called Message Not Received. And it's about, how business communication is getting all messed up. And a point that he makes is that a lot of people use email as a project management tool, just like, hey, what about this? Or where are we on that? And he says, that is not the way to use email. Email is going to kill you if you use it that way. You need to use a project management software if you are tracking something that is complicated, that has multiple people, that has multiple, deadlines, et cetera.
Yeah. But I guess, it touches on that communication is really the key, isn't it? But I know I'm still in the process of weaning my team off, send me a daily email because I want to know what you're doing, but because they're remote. But you know, put all the information. We use Asana as our project management tool. So put all the information in there, because otherwise it just gets buried in my email.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so it's exactly what you say. It sort of gets lost, and you're actually not very efficient. All right, so now this is a very relevant question, I guess. What do you think is the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Yeah, how can they stand out,
yeah,
in other
exactly.
words? Yeah, so my favorite answer to this, the thing that I think is really critical and has been personally very critical to me, is content creation. Mm-hmm. You know, basically what I mean by this is that you can be the best thinker in the world, you can have the best ideas in your head, you can be the most insightful you know, consultant, accountant, lawyer, web designer, whatever it is. But if you do not somehow put your ideas out there and communicate them to other people, no one will ever know if you're any good. You have to start writing about them. You have to start talking about them, giving speeches, doing webinars, doing podcasts, writing blogs. If you do that, other people, you know, your knowledge will become manifest and they can see it and they can say, oh, I love the way he thinks. I'm going to hire him. But until you do that, no one's really ever going to know.
Well, there you go. I think that was just absolute gold-plated, platinum, whatever. That's such good advice, and I think people tend to forget that. I keep telling people around, you know, everybody's sort of saying, how can we get to number one on Google? And I give an answer like that, not enunciated anywhere near as well as that, but I think that I'll have to transcribe that and copy it, because I think that's just such good advice. To get content out there and make sure people can see what is it you know and what value can you add to them. So thanks for that. That's great. Yeah. So what's the future for Dory Clark then? What have you got on the horizon?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you some short term and some long term. So the short term, my goals for myself this year, I want to try to get my book to be a bestseller. Mm-hmm. I want to double my email list, because I believe that email lists are absolutely critical. You have to have a strong opt-in email list of people, you know, community that wants to hear from you. And I also, you know, I want to continue over the next 5 to 10 years really building my brand and building my ability to reach a large audience of people as a business speaker and writer and thinker. In about, you know, 10 years or so, looking in the longer range, I would actually like to become a university president. And so I'd like to find a way to be tapped to lead a prominent university.
In the US, or are you thinking going somewhere else?
Oh, I don't know. If you know any good places in Australia, Jurgen, I'm game for that. I can go down under.
Yeah. Okay, I'll keep my eye out.
Yeah, sounds good.
Hmm. All right. So you mentioned something about big data a little bit earlier on, and one of the things that we do speak about here from time to time is the Internet of Things. What do you see as the future for, you know, big data and the Internet of Things?
Ah, yeah, the Internet of Things is so cool and so fascinating, and has you know, so much promise of you know, all of our different items and appliances talking to each other. I mean, you know, there's smart watches and all these things are integrated. I've been literally wearing today this little thing that, you know, is a souped up pedometer that clips to you know, clips to my belt, syncs with my phone, and here's the interesting part, it was paid for by my health insurance company.
Oh.
And they sent it to me to track my steps. And so, you know, on one hand, that might be sort of a Big Brother thing because they know how lazy or not I am being. On the other hand, I don't really, you know, care because A, I'm an American and we don't really care about privacy. And, you know, right, it's compared to the rest of the world. But B, they bribe me. They actually give me $1 per day that I meet my step goals, and they give it to me in the form of an Amazon gift card every month. So that's kind of interesting. So, you know, I'm impressed at, you know, ways that companies are capturing this data and then harnessing it and nudging people in the right direction. And so we're certainly going to see more of it. You know, wearable technology, embedded technology, things talking to each other. It's going to be, the snowball's growing.
Yeah, that's another fascinating example of how it can be used to educate people and change behavior. Because at the end of the day, I guess that it's in the health insurance's interest that you remain healthy and you don't claim on health insurance because you're ill. And so they're saying, well, if we can get you exercising a little bit more and we can give you some incentives to that, it saves us money in the long term. So,
yeah, I think they're brilliant.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks. So let's come back to the competition. So as I said, I'm giving away a copy of Dori's first book, The Reinventing You. And Dori can tell us a little bit more about that one in a moment. And also I'll ask you to tell us what you'd like the audience to do by way of commenting on the blog post after this podcast.
Yeah, that sounds great, Jürgen. In terms of the audience comments, I mean, I think that that what would you know, one thing you can tell me what you're looking for, but one thing that's always exciting is to hear people's personal stories about how they have reinvented themselves and what that process is. I know I actually was just corresponding today with a reader of mine who has become a friend, a guy named Blair Hughes, who lives in Australia, and he read Reinventing You when it first came out, and as a result of that, he's taken the principles to heart, has reinvented himself, and he was just emailing me to tell me that he's just gotten a 30% raise and trip to England with his company all of these cool things that have happened, and he wanted to update me on his progress. So hearing from people about the strategies that they've used to make changes in their own life is something that I always like hearing about, to see how people are putting the ideas into practice.
Okay, well, that sounds terrific. So leave your comment underneath the video. Tell us about what you've done to reinvent yourself, how you've gone about that, what your experience has been, and also what success you've had. So we'd love to hear that. And I'll get Dori to swing by in a few weeks' time and award that prize. All right.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. So finally, what's the number one piece of advice then you'd give to anyone who wants to be a business leader and expert in their field?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways to do it, and in writing Stand Out, I discovered it's not a one size fits all kind of process, but I'll choose one to give people some advice on, and that is the niche strategy, which I think a lot of people have used to really good effect. Some people might think that if you choose a niche to specialize in, that you are limiting yourself, and they don't want to do that because they say, what if it's too small, and then I have a lot of interests, and so I don't want to pen myself in this way. But what I'd like to actually stress to people is that if you choose a niche early on and really become regarded as an expert in this small niche, you can have big benefits down the road. Number one is that it's actually much easier to establish yourself as an expert in this small thing. Because if you say, I'm an expert in sports, well, that's a really big category. There's a lot of sports. There's a lot of people who talk about sports. But if you say, I'm going to make myself an expert in this particular cricket team or something like that, then all of a sudden, you actually stand a pretty good chance, because all of the major entities, the news entities, are covering the big picture topics. But people know and recognize that because you're focusing on one thing, you really do know more about it than other people. The other thing is that you can strategically expand your niche, because once you start creating relationships on the basis of this niche knowledge, you start writing op-eds or guest posts on blogs, or you get interviewed on by a reporter or something like that. You now have that relationship. They know that you are good and articulate about this one thing, and so it makes them more likely to come to you about related adjacent areas. So maybe you start out as an expert in one cricket team, you then become an expert in cricket, And then you go from there to, okay, now maybe you are an expert in all sports, but you can't start out there. So going deep on one narrow thing is actually a very good way to make your initial incursion.
That's fantastic advice, and it's so counterintuitive to most people starting out in business, but it is absolutely critical, like you say. And it was brought home to me yesterday in a way, and I thought of exactly that point, you know, the niching, because I went to visit my doctor, and of course I need to go and see an orthopedic specialist for the follow-up on the injuries that I've got. And I was already ready. Okay, I only get to see an orthopedic specialist if I get a referral from the doctor. So there's a specialist who's niched down, and they're in such high demand that I've got to go on through this process to see them, and I've got to pay a lot of money then to see them, and so on. And so when I spoke to my doctor, he said, well, we can't go to any orthopedic specialist because they specialize in different things. So some of them will do hips, some of them will do shoulders, some of them will do elbows. So we've got to find the right one for you. And so I thought, wow, that's even more detailed specialization than I was aware of.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, of course, when he rang the guy who, you know, I need a shoulder person, he rang the guy and he said, well, I can't see you for ages. So it's actually a very difficult process to get in there because this person is in such high demand. So, yeah.
That's a great story. That's perfect, Jürgen. Yeah, absolutely. If it works for medical doctors, it can work for you.
That's right. It works. Should work for everybody. All right. So this has really been great, Dory. I really appreciate you spending time with us today. Where can people reach out to you and thank you for all the information you've shared with us today?
Oh, well, thank you very much. Well, on my website, which is doryclark.com, DoreClark, I actually have more than 400 free articles that people can access. So there's a lot of information for people that are interested in personal branding or professional reinvention. And in fact, I have an email list that people can sign up for. They can go to doryclark.com/join, and they can actually get a copy, a free copy of the Reinventing You self-assessment, which has been one of the most popular parts of the book. You know, whenever I get feedback from people, that's usually one of the top things that people say is, oh, I love that self-assessment. And so you can get a free copy of it off of my website. And I'm on Twitter at doryclark.com, so people can feel free to connect with me there.
Okay, thanks, Dory. And we'll put links to all of those things underneath the show notes for the episode, obviously. And also links to the two books on Amazon so people can go and buy the books and read the books. Okay,
thank you.
Well, finally then, Dory, who do you think I should interview next on the podcast and why?
Oh, well, I'm going to suggest my friend Judy Robinette. Have you talked to her yet, Jürgen?
No, I haven't, no.
I think you'll like her a lot. She is an author of a book called How to Become a Power Connector. She is a networking maven and a great person who really practices what she preaches. But she has interesting and insightful views about how to build your professional relationships in a way that pays dividends for you and for the other person. So I think that that she would lend some great insights to your show if you would like an introduction.
Yeah, I'd love that. So that's Judy
Robinette.
Judy Robinette.
I can do an email intro for you.
Okay, that would be great. So Judy, look out. If you're watching this, look out for an invitation to the Innova Buzz podcast from me. Look forward to that. Well, thanks very much, Dory. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. It's been a fascinating interview and discussion. I really look forward to getting back to reading the Reinventing You book. And I also look forward to, in mid-April, getting a hold of the How to Stand Out. So thanks very much for being on the podcast.
Jürgen, thank you so much. Great to talk with you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. I hope you enjoyed meeting Dory as much as I enjoyed interviewing her. I certainly had a ball on that podcast, as I hope she did. I learned a lot out of that interview as well. Not only was it fun, but we got three key messages. First of all, publish your ideas and get them out there. Secondly, leverage your capabilities. And thirdly, focusing on your niche. Of course, there was a lot of other cool stuff there. And it's well worth listening to over and over again. Now, you can subscribe to this podcast over on iTunes or on Stitcher so that you'll never miss a future episode. All the show notes for this episode are going to be at novabiz.com.au/DoreyClark. That's DoreyClark. Innovabiz.com/DoreyClark. So that's Clark without an E, by the way. So that will have all the show notes, all the links and the resources that we spoke about, and also the place where you can enter the competition. So remember, leave your comments underneath the video for your chance to win a copy of Dory's book, Reinventing You. Tell us about what you've done to reinvent yourself, how you've gone about that, what your experience has been, and also what success you've had. We'd particularly like to hear about that. And I'll get Dory to swing by in a few weeks and award the prize to the entry she likes best. Now, Dory suggested I interview networking maven and author Judy Robinette on a future podcast. So, Judy, look out for an invitation to the InnovaBuzz podcast from me, courtesy of Dory Clark. Now, if you like these podcasts, or indeed if you think they're no good, we'd love to get your feedback over on iTunes because it does help us rank better. And if you think there are things we need to do to improve, then let us know, because we're into continuous improvement and we always want to do better. Of course, if we get a lot of good reviews there, it will help us to rank better and it will help us to share all this wonderful information that these people share with us. With a much larger audience, and that's one of the things that I'm really passionate about. So until next time, remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.